Yeah, I have a very, very extensive collection of LA memorabilia, especially menus, postcards and matchbooks and pamphlets and souvenir books. Oh my gosh, it's insane.
Now more from Allison Martino.
I grew up more in show business than Hollywood. My dad was an entertainer, sang live. So I was on the road a lot with him. I'm an only child, so I was able to, you know, go to the casinos when I was young, put on my little dress and make sure I acted proper. And, you know, it was like, you know, back then kids couldn't even walk through casinos. You know, it was really for adult Fantasyland and adult Disneyland. But as I got older, got more accepted to, you know, wear jeans and, you know, have tourists come in with pictures, take pictures of slot machines. You couldn't even do that when I was growing up. And I also grew up here in LA. So I had a balance. My parents also had a house in Philadelphia. My dad was from South Philly. So he had a lot of South Philly in him, but he always loved coming back to LA because all his entertainment friends were here. Today, we just lost James Caan. So that's been really, really sad for us to lose someone that magnetic and that larger than life person that we used to see a lot in the area. And there was a little restaurant called Cafe Roma in Beverly Hills. It's still there. And Mulberry Street Pizza across the street. James was a fixture at both those places. So we would see him all through the years. And now he's gone. And every time you lose someone like that, it's not just losing someone in the entertainment industry, a beloved actor that you just love so much, but part of the community. And just, he was so personable and he was accessible and he was there. Those kinds of sentiments are hitting me today of just not being able to see him. And, you know, my dad was obviously back in the day when, I'm sure they still do this in certain casinos, comics always opened up for singers. So I grew up with a lot of funny people because dad was kind of a funny guy too. So he became friends with a lot of them, like George Carlin or later Don Rickles in life. Maury Amsterdam was one of dad's friends, best friends, and Shecky Green, Norm Crosby. It's those types. Buddy Hackett were sort of our dinner parties. and they're, most of them are gone now. So I'm so lucky I was interested back then to just be around them. I wasn't playing in my room playing video games. I actually wanted to be part of this scene of these funny men and women and incredible stories at the table. I'm very grateful. And so, yeah, we're just, you know, losing quite a few of them.
Yes, James is a really sad loss.
Yes, that is a really, really, really sad loss. So I think, like, through growing up here in LA and seeing all the changes in LA, and my father was quite older than me, so a lot of his friends have passed on as I was getting older too, that I feel so close to my past. I feel so close to presenting it to the future so we can preserve things and celebrate people and not always be interested in just the newest fad, but to go back and celebrate what we also had in order to move forward. We should celebrate older actors. We should celebrate, I don't know, maybe take a day and not be on your cell phone for an entire day. I don't know if I can do it. I've tried, you know, I lived half my life without it. And so it's funny. My generation lived, you know, half our lives without the internet, without cell phones, without Google, without texting. And now the other half is, you know, I seem to get by though. Okay. Before, but now it's a whole different world. And I think that is interesting for followers on Vintage LA to see what the city looked like before technology, before digital billboards, before cars changed too drastically. You know, back in the day, you could tell every car by the year. You know, I don't think we can do that today with newer cars. That's another thing people seem to love about Vintage LA is, you know, LA was built on car culture. That's why I love color photographs from back then. I love photography, black and white, but I'm a big fan of colored photos only for the documentation part of it. So I can see what the colors of the car look like and what the colors of the building look like. And I do think there was a lot more color in that black and white world that we look at. There was actually a lot more color behind that black and white.
Yeah, true. Something that fascinated me was I had taken a class that was all about broadcasting in college, and they talked about just the amazing colors and costumes that were involved during the black and white days of cinema or television, and the choices they'd make for how it'd come across on the screen, that type of stuff you don't always think about when you watch that stuff.
Exactly.
How colorful the world was.
Right. I mean, we think about how what film looked like back then and wasn't as sharp or clear today, so we don't even know sometimes even what the textures were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why sometimes when they like the Godfather's 50th anniversary was this year, and there's been a beautiful remaster print of that that I saw at the Academy, and I was seeing, because I've seen the movie about, you know, 100 times, but be able to see so close into the clothing and to be able to see like, oh my god, that's corduroy. I never knew that was, it didn't appear like that because much darker print. So it's always fascinating to go back and see what things really look like.
Yes. Yeah, all the remastering they've been doing with classics is really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I had just watched the remastered versions of like Rebel Without a Cause not too long ago. Oh. I was like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. It looks like it was just made right now.
Yeah, yeah. And thank God for TCM and, mm-hmm. you know, the TCM film festivals and what you're doing. It's just the more of this, the better.
Yes.
There was an era of time when we really weren't celebrating old films. I mean, there might be some revival theaters here and there, but thank God for, you know, Quentin Tarantino and buying the New Beverly, and now he's got the other theater. I mean, this is like, and then he's got all those prints. So they're from his private collection, I guess. I mean, to be able to go and see a film that you may love and adore from 30, 40 years ago, any night of the week is pretty great. Cause I tend to be more of a person that likes to go to a movie rather than watch it at home. I like the popcorn experience. I like going to, I like being in an audience. I like hearing their reaction. I like laughter. I like this, you know, if it's scary. I enjoy being around that. And the, you know, the American Cinematheque is incredible. And everyone should follow that. And everyone should go to the New Beverly and support these incredible theaters that show some of our favorite films, movies maybe we never could have seen that we get to see. And then, of course, there's TCM. If you want to stay home and be home, I mean, at night, you're home. At, you know, after midnight is when I start a movie up on TCM. And we're just learning more. This is the greatest thing about having more channels, having the internet, having Facebook, having Instagram, is there's so much coming at me. And people are always emailing me, have you ever seen this movie before that was shot in LA? I love watching movies that were shot in Los Angeles. I'm learning about movies I never would have known about. And I go, well, how do I see it? Oh, we have a link for you. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's on YouTube, or it's on this, or it's on Vimeo. There's so much to find. Back even when I was producing Mysteries and Scandals and I had to fill that in with a bunch of media with photographs, I had to call footage houses, ask them to put, if you have any, you know, old LA footage, put it on the video, and you get a screener, you know, with the time code at the bottom. And that's how you kind of were able to see what LA looked like back then. And now, you know, YouTube, LA, 1940s, it's all there.
Yes, getting to archive all this in these different ways that are accessible for people, it is fantastic. Something yeah. even a book couldn't achieve, you know?
Exactly, yeah. It's very visual.
Yes.
And people are doing wonderful things with the footage that they're finding. They are transferring them and uploading them. And so you can see pretty much all over the world what you want to see.
Yes.
From that, you know, from that time. So it's like, if there were more of me, I'd be doing vintage New York and vintage. I would do vintage everything if I could. I don't do it because I want to stay focused on LA, because I know it and I grew up here and I kind of know what I'm talking about when I'm presenting images, and I don't want to come across in a city that, well, what does she know that she doesn't know? But you learn, everyone can learn, but I don't want to be the driving force on that. I want to learn from other Facebook pages. So who's ever out there, if you want to do Vintage Ohio, vintage, you know, do it, because I would visit those pages all the time.
Nice. Yes. Let's get a vintage across all of America.
Yeah.
We need it everywhere.
Just don't recreate Vintage LA.
Oh no. Yes. Of course not.
I'm kidding. I don't care. I mean, I love seeing stuff I've never seen. I love hearing stories I have never heard. The more there is, the better, because then we learn, and it's good to learn, you know, where the city you're living in, the city you're visiting in. So many people ask me, oh, I'm only going to be in LA for a weekend. Where should I go? You know, luckily there's there's Facebook pages to guide you to that. You know, you want to go to Moussone Frank, Hollywood's oldest restaurant. Here's their Facebook page. It's important for, you know, businesses to have those Facebook pages and to have a maybe a historic section of your business.
You worked for several channels such as Bravo, TV Land, A&E, and E! Entertainment Television, many more. What was it like being a television producer and what sort of shows were you a part of?
Well, I started at a really, really good time because I started in the mid-90s, right when E! Entertainment TV was launching. So it felt like I was going to kind of like film school. You know, I learned how to edit. I learned how to shoot. I learned how to conduct interviews. We were young kids, some of us right out of college, and we wanted to work. I know I wanted to work in the entertainment industry. So I was there 8 years and I started as a receptionist and left as a producer. So it was, I really climbed. And I think it's important that you do climb. You don't have to get in right at the top when you start a job. You can absolutely start in the mailroom, on the phones. I got to know everybody that way. And I feel like I got more opportunities because I got to know different departments more than the average person. But there was a show, and I was just very lucky, that was starting at that time called Mysteries and Scandals. And I was very interested in that show. And I knew nothing about making TV. So I started as a production assistant. Our little show ended up producing 160 episodes. So we really, 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 we worked hard. We interviewed people for that show that, again, a lot of them were still alive. I mean, Dennis Hopper called us. We had Jack Lemmon on our show. We had Rod Steiger weekly, Steve Allen. It was an incredible time because we're talking about Hollywood through, and they're telling us about it. You know, today you really, if you want to go back that far, you need biographers and, you know, maybe a family member that still remembers things that was young. But back then there was still in the 90s, plenty of old Hollywood legends and TV talk show hosts around, publicists, studio heads, like A.C. Lyles was very involved with our show that would tell us how it was. I was very proud of that show because it was coming from them. And I don't think it could be duplicated today unless you're going to do Hollywood from 20 years ago, but hard to do from 50, 60 or 70 years ago. Mysteries and Scandals was the best thing that ever happened to me because not only did I love it and was obsessed with the subject and loved doing my research, had to go to the library to do the research. I had to go to like old cinema shops on Hollywood Boulevard. I had to go into the yellow pages and the white pages to find my subjects to interview. You'd call 411 on the phone and ask, do you have this person available? And you know, do they have a number? This was the old way of producing TV. Now one tweet goes out. Does anybody know someone that can help me get this? And you know, look, I'm so grateful for today's way of finding people within seconds, but the old fashioned way was kind of fun too, because it really made you hunt for those people. When you got them booked, you're like, wow, I did that. When the 2000 hit, things changed, everything changed, and TV changed. Reality TV kind of took over. And I was more from a biography type background, behind the music and headlines and legends, Mysteries and Scandals, True Hollywood Stories. Those were the shows I was involved in. And the storytelling that I wanted to do as a journalist and biographer. But I had to make a living, and those shows sort of, they went away and reality TV came in. So for about 8 years, I produced reality TV, some pretty tough content like Intervention and Celebrity Rehab, which was so different than what I had been known to do. But I sort of enjoyed, even though the subject was hard, knowing that there was a good cause going into this, that we were educating the viewers about addiction. And so that was a big part of my life, was producing those shows and going out there, this very guerrilla filmmaking, because you are in the trenches with people that are in trouble and you want to capture that, but you also don't want to make a mockery of them. I worked alongside Dr. Drew. I thought Intervention was actually a really more of a documentary type show about addiction than a reality show. So I was proud of that show. And then I thought, okay, I kind of need to move from there. And I got involved with home design makeover shows. And I love makeovers and I love interior design. And I did a plethora of those shows. Like Trading Spaces was one of my favorites because we got to travel all over the country for that. There was a great show on USA called, Merge. I did Merge with Lisa Rinna. That was also a really fun show. Forgot about that. Yeah, you're taking me down memory lane here. And then I got to learn a lot about carpentry and furniture and the reveal. You know, everything is about the reveal at the very end. That was a great show to do. And then I just needed a break because those shows take up a lot of your time, sometimes 17 to 18 hours a day, several times no break at all. And I was going to take a position on Big Brother, and my agent got me the job, and I went through two or three interviews. And when they told me that I might be sleeping under my desk, I was driving home from that interview after I accepted it and realized by the time I pulled into my driveway, I wasn't going to take it because I just needed some time to just decompress. And that's when I started Vintage LA. That was my breather. And my father had just passed away, and I thought I definitely needed some time, and I wanted to be home. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to go online and start doing this as a hobby and just get my mind off stuff, you know, and mm-hmm. look what happened. So that was my journey. And now, you know, I'm on Spectrum News, and I'm now on the other side of the camera, and I'm reporting segments about the history of LA. So that's been also an organic magic situation.
Well, we just went full circle there.
We did. We did. Now I'm going to sleep. I'm tired.
Wow. Yes, you're reliving your whole life. Because I know you enjoy collecting memorabilia. You talked a little bit about that. And specifically, one of your main things is restaurant memorabilia from around the area. Could you tell us a little bit about some of your favorite pieces or what you've been collecting?
Yes, you should come and see it.
I would love to.
We should do a part two where you take your camera around and I'll show you everything. I'm serious. It's very fun to see.
Okay.
I have a very, very extensive collection of LA memorabilia, especially menus and all types of paper stuff, postcards and matchbooks and pamphlets and souvenir books. Oh my gosh. It's insane. Collecting since about, honestly, since I was about 17 or 18, you know, going to flea markets, invading my parents' friends' houses, also always asking them, do you have any matchbooks in your bar area? Or do you have any old menus? My parents are like, so strange, but their friends kind of thought it was interesting. Yes, actually, we have an old Chasen's menu. Would you like it? I like auctions a lot now. So I'm starting to get involved with the auctions. And I got some interesting pieces from the Doris Day auction, from the Robert Evans auction, from the Zsa Zsa Gabor auction. And it's dangerous, okay? I'm not telling everybody should get into this because there's always something you want. And there's always something you're not going to get. Either it's too much, you get outbid, or you miss it. You just didn't get the gavel down in time. You know, it's all part of the rush of collecting, but I'm proud of my collection. I hope one day to have somewhere to display it, but it's here right now and stored in various places. Tommy is holding some stuff for me at Valley Relics, and there's some stuff in store. There's a lot of stuff. I have a lot of ashtrays too, probably from every defunct restaurant or hotel or bar that ever existed. So it's 30,000-40,000 matchbooks. I don't know what I have, I should say, but one day I always say this, I want to categorize it. Like I really want to catalog everything I have and then make another section of what I still need to complete, you know, I'm talking about like the matchbooks and the paper and the, you know, it's an endless thing, but yes, I very much love memorabilia.
I love collecting too. I've been doing it since I was.
What do you have?
I like to collect autographs, really. That's one of my favorite things. I've gotten a few cool ones.
That's very cool because today nobody does autographs, it's all selfies.
And yeah, I know.
It's really too bad because I think at the end of the day, I like to hold something. I like to have something that somebody touched, that somebody, you know, I kind of regretted not doing more autographs. I never asked for autographs, just like, I wish that was a little intimidated to do that as a kid. I think I got Barbara Eden's, you know, once, and I'm so glad I did that. But I mean, I think today it's really cool to have that, you know, but it's all selfies today.
I always go
that's
for the
their
autograph.
Souvenir, I guess, when they meet someone.
Well, cool. I'd love to see your collection one day.
Yeah, anytime.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today. You've lived such an amazing life and done so much for the community. It's really incredible. So I really appreciate getting to talk to you about it all.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. It was like the fastest hour that ever went by.
Oh, great.
Yeah, really. That. Sometimes they don't feel like that. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad to hear that. Learn everything you need to know about the festival at burbankfilmfest.org.